Hi, everyone, and welcome to the latest edition of KleptoCast, the podcast series from Hudson Institute's Kleptocracy Initiative. I'm Casey Michelle, and I'll be speaking today with Aaron Bornstein. Aaron was the executive director of the Bota Foundation in Kazakhstan, which was the first foundation in the world established from a Foreign Corrupt Practices Act settlement. Aaron is now consulting for the World Bank and has worked extensively in countries from Azerbaijan to Zimbabwe. So, Aaron, thanks for being with us today. Firstly, I was wondering if you could walk us through just how the Bota Foundation came to be. What were the goals of the foundation, and where did the idea for a foundation like this really come from?
Right. Well, thank you for having me on your podcast. The Bota Foundation came to be as a result of negotiations between the governments of the United States, Switzerland, and Kazakhstan. In 1999, there was a bank account in Switzerland that was frozen at the request initially of the president and government of Kazakhstan. They were looking for dirt on a rival, a political rival. Turned out to be kind of a wrong move on his side because the Swiss investigated that account and the U.S. as well, and linked it, in fact, to the president and other high-level governments in Kazakhstan. And so that account was frozen. First, Swiss, as part of their investigation that was initiated at the request of the president of Kazakhstan. And later, it was about to be released, still in 1999, back to the government, but the DOJ, Department of Justice, asked that it be frozen in connection with its investigation into a U.S. citizen named James Giffen. Giffen was the intermediary, in fact, between U.S. oil companies, at least four of them, and the president and high-level officials in Kazakhstan, who were looking to get drilling contracts in the Caspian Sea in the 1990s. And Giffen himself was arrested after a few-year investigation in 2003, and that money had been frozen since 1999. Discussions between the governments of Kazakhstan, the U.S., and Switzerland, the first two countries, Switzerland and U.S., started talking about it in 2003. In 2005, Kazakhstan joined the conversation. There was 2 years of negotiation brokered by the World Bank, and eventually it was decided to use this money to start a foundation, the first foundation in the world, as you said, that was started as a result of a Foreign Corrupt Practice Act investigation, anyway, at that point. So that's how Bota came to be.
So it sounds as if, since this was the first of its kind, obviously there wasn't necessarily a precedent to fall back on. Was the situation such that it was the kind of right place, right time, right actors involved to implement a foundation like this? Or is this something that especially Western actors have been hoping to push in an FCPA case before, and it just so happened to be that Kazakhstan, in this case, was the one to do it in?
Yeah, I mean, I think it had a lot to do with right place, right time kind of thing. Mm-hmm. You know, and in fact, the motivations of the three parties, as I know, the three governments, was somewhat different. You know, the Swiss government signed on to the UNCTAD Convention, actually pushed it, the UN Convention Against Corruption, and was active in the idea of taking or using what's known as stolen assets or recovered stolen assets and actually giving them back to the countries where the money had come from. But for the U.S., that was kind of a non-starter because they didn't want to give this money that was obviously came from bribes, at least obviously from their point of view, back to Kazakhstan. And Kazakhstan, it was kind of a political embarrassment that there was this $84 million that was frozen in 1999, and actually it led to a bit of a crisis for them, a political crisis called Kazakhstan. And Kazakhstan actually gave up claim to the funds. Actually, they never gave up claim to the funds, but they said they would use them for starting the foundation. So, in fact, I think it was the World Bank and the World Bank's intervention that led to the start of the foundation. And it really is a question if the World Bank wasn't involved as kind of an honest broker between the three governments and came up. If the World Bank had not come up with the idea of the foundation, it's not clear that such a foundation would have started. Mm-hmm. So, you know, the foundation itself, though, has been cited again and again and again by civil society organizations and activists. Mm-hmm. Just a couple of weeks ago, there was a Washington Post editorial by an Uzbeki activist who mm-hmm. said, you know, let's take the $900 million or so that is frozen in connection with the ex-president's daughter mm-hmm. in Uzbekistan, and let's do a Bota Foundation. So mm-hmm. that's happened in Ukraine and other countries, Nigeria and so on, where there's these stolen assets or cases of recovered assets that, mm-hmm. that the potential is to send them back to these countries. But it doesn't exactly pass the smell test to send them where they could disappear again. That's been the track record in many of these cases.
Sure. Well, Aaron, you've anticipated where my line of questioning was going in terms of Uzbekistan and the recent bribery allegations and frozen funds around the Karimov family, especially Gulnara Karimova. But before we get to that, I was hoping just to ask one other question as it pertained to the Bota Foundation in Kazakhstan, or at least how it was set up. I think it's relatively understandable why the Kazakh government would be open to setting up an organization like this, especially from a reputational point of view. Why was it that the U.S. and Switzerland were so keen on the Bota Foundation? And I only ask in the sense that the U.S. and Switzerland are very well known for their offshore services and for their financial secrecy vehicles. Why is it that they were open to an organization like this?
Well, you know, it's a good question. And, of course, you know, when you think of the Swiss or you think of the U.S., it's a complicated network and system of different agents and interests and so on. So, of course, you have the banking sector. You also have the DOJ trying to you have situations where you're on one hand is trying to keep out this so-called evil money, and on another mm-hmm. hand is trying to or doesn't have any objection or not doing too much to keep it out. Mm-hmm. So it was the first hand, if you will, that was open to the Bota Foundation, the idea of the Bota Foundation. And, you know, to be honest, I think that, there probably wouldn't be an objection so much for future cases to be settled in the same way, at least by the Swiss or U.S. when they have mm-hmm. such possibilities. The real issue, or, you know, not the real issue, but a really important issue is where the money came from, or where the bribes took place, or where it could be potentially set back to. Mm-hmm. Because, as I mentioned, this UNCAC convention, this UN Convention Against Corruption, which mm-hmm. most countries in the world have signed up for, has a section on stolen assets. And part of that section says that these countries where the money came from have a right to get it back. Mm-hmm. And so these are the countries, these kind of, you know, the Nigerias, Uzbekistans, and so on of the mm-hmm. world, that really need to be convinced that setting up such a foundation is in their interest. And, you know, that's a tough story. Tell you the truth.
Based on, I guess, all of the analyses that are out there, to say nothing of our conversation today, it seems, given the fact that the Botha Foundation was the first of its kind in setting up this mechanism for repatriating frozen funds that have been picked up in bribery cases and bribery allegations, it seems as if it was at least a relative success, especially in Kazakhstan. Has there been increased momentum that you've noticed for setting up comparable organizations like this elsewhere in places like Nigeria or Ukraine, or has that momentum kind of stalled out over the past few years?
Well, you know, it hasn't stalled out per se, but it hasn't really picked up any great speed either. As I said, it's these countries where the Nigerians and Uzbekistans of the world that have to think, gosh, that's a good use of their money, or what they think of as their money, rather than getting it back and putting it back into these national treasury accounts, where, as I say, oftentimes in the past, the track record when that happens isn't so good. Mm-hmm. But they, under UN convention, have to have that right. So there hasn't been a whole lot of momentum to set up new such foundations, but there is talk about doing so. And so, for example, in February coming up in 2017, there's going to be a conference in Addis Ababa in Ethiopia, a development financing conference, in which the recovered stolen assets is going to be the main topic. Like, how do you use these recovered stolen assets in the context of development financing needs? And is the Botha Foundation, one of the ways you could, is the model that the foundation set up, one of the ways you could use them? And so, in fact, I've been invited to go speak at that conference, and there will be attorney generals or the equivalent from countries all over the world that will be going to hear what I have to say. And you know, I was told by the conference organizers, don't dwell on the dirty part, if you will. You know, don't talk about, you know, the bribes and all that. You know, they don't want to remind them of the pain, if you will, or something that might seem strange to them.
Sure.
Or might set up some alarm bell. But talk about, the good that the foundation did. And, you know, I have a long list of things I can talk about from that perspective. As you say, the foundation was considered a success, had independent evaluations that attested to that, the World Bank, positive reviews and so on, the very clean audits from year to year. And it had a lot of lessons, you know. I wouldn't say that Botha was the perfect model, but what it offered was a way of doing business, of returning these stolen assets in a way that, at least in Kazakhstan, helped over 200,000 poor children and youth, some with scholarships, many with NGO grants kinds of assistance. And much of our money went directly to poor people. Something like almost $80 million of the money we had went directly back to people in one form or another. And so, you know, that's a big track record. We could track, every penny of that money. And we had reports, and we also did a lot of innovative things, helping in terms of NGO capacity building and that kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
So, as I say, we have a lot of things to offer. Botha did a lot of interesting and innovative things. It proved itself. Use the money for good purposes and so on. And if I'm able to convince in this conference in Addis Ababa, you know, some important decision maker that, that sounds like we should or could do something like that, that hopefully there'll be more such foundations in the future. Of course, it's not just me. There are other people who are trying to push this, but it's a struggle. Hopefully, you know, we could have a conversation in a few years' time, and, yeah. and we'll talk about, geez, these are happening all over the world, you know? And so glad to hear about that. But yeah. up until now, Botha remains the sole example.
I certainly hope we'll be reconvening in a few years to compare notes and see just how much the model has grown and expanded into other countries. One of the things that we mentioned earlier in the conversation, which you brought up, was the current situation going on in Uzbekistan. I'm not sure how closely you've been following that, at least financial situation, but the magnitude of the funds involved is significantly larger than what we saw, what you saw and experienced in Kazakhstan, where that was about $80 million or so tied to the Nazarbayev regime. This is upwards of $1 billion or thereabouts that have been tied to Gulnara Karimova and her family in Tashkent. I was wondering, in terms of replication in Central Asia and in Uzbekistan especially, do you think there's a possibility for setting something up like the Botha Foundation in Uzbekistan in the near future?
Yeah, I mean, I have been following it pretty closely, and, you know, the kind of the common wisdom, if there is any, is that under current conditions, it would be difficult to set up such a foundation in Uzbekistan. Independent NGOs are illegal in Uzbekistan, as far as I understand, and Botha was set up and established as an independent organization that had actually no ties, at least in its operations, to the government of Kazakhstan. Mm-hmm. And so setting up an independent organization to spend close to $1 billion, as you said, in a country where something like that doesn't even sound like it's illegal would take a lot of doing. It's not to say it couldn't be done, though. I know that conversations between the Department of Justice and the government of Uzbekistan have been going on for a long time now about this subject. I would hope that at least a portion of the money, if not all of the money, could be used to, for this kind of thing, just to set up a foundation like that. It's also possible to think of alternative uses that wouldn't necessarily involve a foundation. You could think of an international scholarship program, for example, and that could be administered by, you know, a third party. And you could think of other ways of using the money that would benefit poor Uzbeki citizens, and not necessarily have this money flow back into the treasury of Uzbekistan. Mm-hmm. But it's a tough one because I understand that the government of Uzbekistan has put a claim on the money and wants it back for them. Mm-hmm. And just like in the case of Kazakhstan and Botha, the Department of Justice doesn't want to give it back with no strings attached. So, of course, the interesting question is, well, what happens under the new Trump administration? And of course, I don't have a good answer to that, but that's an interesting question. Whether they want to pursue such discussions under a Trump appointee Department of Justice, whether they even want to continue the part of the DOJ which is looking at these kinds of issues, the kleptocracy initiative there, whether they want to continue that unit, I don't know. And so it could be that the government in Uzbekistan is kind of just waiting it out, or it could be that the current team wants to do a deal as quickly as possible. But I would assume that we'll know the answer to that in a couple of months.